Welcome to TA1, everything you wanted to know about adventure racing and then some. I'm your host, legendary Randy Erickson, and it's a new year, so happy new year to everybody. And we're going to start this one out with possibly the most inside, quote-unquote, baseball podcast. So a lot of things that Tracy and I talk about that won't make any sense to anybody, but we explain all that, so yeah, there you go. Just deal with it. Figure it out later. Ask us later. We'll make up some lies to tell you. Yeah, freaking cold. It's like 5 below tonight. 50 by the weekend, so we can live with that. And, yeah, what? 5 or 7 weeks to see the start of the season-ish. I may get to go to Georgia before that. We'll see. With the Flying Ghost Racing Team doing some testing in February. So I may be there. I may not be there. And that's all I'm going to say about that. So it's enough of my rambling because I never have anything real to say here anyway. So remember, slow is fast. Fast is good. Take some chances. Be safe. Try to stay warm. And we'll catch you next time. Thanks for listening. Bye.
What's up? I can't hear you.
Now I'm connected to the audio.
Oh, there you are. Your adorable little log cabin. I love it.
Yeah, it is. You home sweet home. Say that again.
Did you build your log cabin with your bare hands?
Everything but the logs.
You bought those?
Well, there was a company here that literally they build it in their yard, then they tear it down and bring it and set it up.
Ah.
So
gotcha.
Yeah, I pulled up in front of the house on July 5th. 2000, and there's this big thing of logs there, and I'm like, now what do I do?
So, it's just like Lincoln logs, like you've had those, so
yeah. Well, right. But the Lincoln logs are easy. It's putting all the stuff in it that's hard.
Oh yeah, like where
like yeah, like if you look, I don't know if you can see up the top, but the top of the walls, you got to make everything slip because the logs all So you got to make a thing so it slips, you know, so.
Gotcha.
Yeah, it was a learning experience. So started the 5th of July, and we moved in the weekend after Thanksgiving.
But oh, my God. Where did you live in the meantime?
I lived here while I was building. Oh. Lived in my folks' motorhome outside, so I would work.
And by the river?
Basically, yeah, 14, 16 hours every day, sleep, get up, repeat.
Yeah. That but was how my job. The house you built with your own hands, though. I mean, that's gotta be.
It's pretty cool. There's some things that maybe I should remodel, but it's like I gotta have time. I don't have time. Everybody wants stuff done.
So, how dare they?
I know, it sucks.
I know. You'd be amazed. You'd be amazed how much I get done now that I'm unemployed. It's like the whole day.
So I used to back way, 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 way back when I was riding and racing, and a lot of times, you know, in the wintertime, commercial construction, we wouldn't be doing anything. And I'd screw off all day, the end of the day. And it's like, I haven't trained or anything. So,
right. So, did you adventure race at one point?
No.
Okay. No. You just mountain biked.
Well, I rode bike, mountain bike, trail ran pretty good. I was okay road racing. But that was in the day when, you know, okay was okay. And triathlons was pretty good for a while.
Oh, wow.
Because there was a time where if you were a good cyclist, that's all that mattered.
Right, because nobody gives a shit about the swim.
No. Yeah. I'd literally come out of the swim last. Pass everybody on the bike and then be able to run okay. So
the one triathlon that I ever did, I did a sprint and I came in last. like not last in my age group, not last in my wave, last. The last person out on the course.
Well, you beat everybody that wasn't there.
No, true.
As they say.
And I had to fall in the water for that. So
that's true. So
I cannot tell you how excited I was at the turkey burn that Danielle and I did not go in the water from the canoe, because neither of us are canoe people. We're both kayakers. And we were both like, oh, this is going to be bad. You know, although if you have to fall into water, like Wekiva Springs is the place to do it, because it's stunning. Like the water's only 18 inches deep and it's crystal clear and it's the perfect temperature. And it's like, son, damn, maybe we should go in the water. It's kind of sweaty. And you know, like, by the end of it, I mean, I started that race looking like roadkill. And by the end of it, I smelled like it too. So
maybe it should. Sounds like an adventure race.
So. But anyway,
so anyway,
have an intro. What do we do?
Well, I got to do full disclosure first.
Okay.
So full disclosure, in my culture, when you save somebody's life, you're responsible for that life forever. So I thought I was really getting tired of being responsible for you. So I thought, hey, I'll just put her on the podcast and I don't owe her life anymore.
And you don't owe me anymore. That seems reasonable.
Except in my culture, we're not like that. So I'll probably still have to watch out for you forever. So. And we'll decide later if we'll tell people the story or not. We could rush them on it. We could both tell our versions.
Oh my God. Yeah. That's how you know that that's a great story. It's because I tell it all the time and it makes me look like an idiot and I don't care because it's just too good not to tell.
Yeah.
Have you not heard the story? Oh, let me tell you. Sit down for a minute. It takes a while.
Yeah. Maybe we'll let people show up at your race and you'll tell them the story.
It's that can be a checkpoint. They have at some point they have to tell me if they know the story or not and they get a point.
Yeah. I have a few stories that are sort of like that, long and involved, that I only tell when I'm out with people. Right. You know, they may be racing, I may be just out walking with them, or we might be out with somebody just
have the time. Doing whatever.
Yeah, because it takes forever and it's just a much better story in real life. But bottom line is I saved Tracy's life and now I have to watch out for her forever.
So true. So true. It's too bad we can't see the audience because we could do a show of hands who has not seen it. Who has not heard the story. Because I was really surprised that Donna Boots didn't know. Like, we just told Donna Boots about it, 3 weeks ago. And she's like, what are you talking about? I'm like, how can you not have heard this story? I've told it a thousand times.
Well, and especially, let's say, Southeast people.
Yeah. Well, she's from New York, so.
Well, she lives there half the time.
True. True that.
So we've done all that. So who are you?
I am Tracy Brower and I am the world's worst adventure racer. I am here on Randy's podcast because I'm putting on a race in Savannah in April of 2022. And we're going to talk about all kinds of fun things.
We are. And I'm going to argue with you about being the world's worst. Well, I'll be halfway serious. So after you almost died and I saved your life.
I was in 18 inches of water, Randy.
No, it was probably 36. I got pretty wet. You finished the race.
Yeah.
So
I finished crying on a bench at Grumpy Men Brewery because I just got my ass kicked so badly.
Yeah, but you still finished. And I when I tell the story, I make sure that that part is included because, and the fact that you did it on your a solo because nobody would do it with you.
That's true.
I don't mention this because you don't have any friends, but you just
couldn't. No, I just didn't have anybody dumb enough to do that.
So what got you to that point of your first adventure race?
I had been trying to get more fit, and so I was taking on, a whole series of challenges Yeah, I was I was in a online fitness group called Nerd Fitness, which you may have heard of.
I haven't. Sounds nerdy.
Sorry, never broke my throat. And so part of their shtick is that you pick a goal for every month and you try to do something new, you know? So like one month I tried to learn how to do a handstand. You can imagine how that went. One time, I can't remember, I tried to like hike 10 miles with a ruck and I did that. So I think I had trained right before that. I did the CrossFit Open and I did really well for my age group. And then the next thing I picked was this adventure race. And I was like, oh, I have 3 months to train and I love to be outdoors. So this is going to be great. And the year before, I had done a combination cycling and kayaking trip of the Keys. I kayaked from Marathon to Key West. And then I picked up my bicycle and I rode back. So I thought I was in better condition than I was. And I honestly showed up on race day, not really knowing what I was going to have to do. Like, I didn't know if I was going to have to bushwhack my way to Alabama. You know, was there going to be trails? Was there going to be, sorry, I have something in my throat. Like, I really didn't know. And that sapped a lot of mental energy for me. Like, that was really tiring to be that spooked and not know what was going on.
Did you know anything about adventure racing? Did you realize you're going to have to navigate? Did you have a compass?
I did have a compass. I had two compasses, in fact.
Okay.
And yeah, I did. And I had spent some time learning how to shoot a bearing and orient the map and count steps and stuff like that. So I trained for it for 3 months. The race was in May and I think I signed up for it in like the beginning of February. And I spent 3 months training and I didn't run enough. Like, I think I thought there wouldn't be quite as much running as there was. And I was training on my road bike because I didn't get a mountain bike until really, really close to the race. Like, I think I rode my mountain bike twice before the race itself. And that I absolutely got handed my ass because, you know, it's just so different. It's just a different thing. The bike is so much heavier and your weight is distributed and it was just rough. So between being nervous getting up there and then it was just so much harder than I expected. I think I thought it was like an off-road triathlon, you know, like you just, you know, I mean, I knew we wouldn't know what order it would come in and so forth. But and at the same time, I was like, God, am I gonna have, like, you know, like I said, bushwhack my, should I have a machete? I don't know what to do. And then I went out and did it. And like I said, I ended it crying on a bench because I got so badly. And I remember getting in the car afterward and calling some of my friends and being like, okay, that was a bucket list thing. And I've done that now. And I will never, ever do that again. Ever. And then 6 weeks later, I started thinking about, you know, if I had done this, that part would have gone easier. And what if I change, you know, and I just, the wheel started turning and it just, for some reason, I just got hooked on it and just stayed involved with it. So,
yeah. So the nerd group, is that something, do you need that public proclamation that you're going to do something?
I did at the time. Yeah. It was like, because it kind of held you accountable, you know, yeah. You told them you're going to do it. Yeah. Now I am more comfortable just saying to people, yeah, I'm going to, you know, walk to Alaska and I'll just do it, you know?
Yeah.
But at that time I needed, and I also needed people that I could tell that to who weren't going to laugh at me. Do you know what I'm saying? That weren't going to go, you're an idiot. Don't go do that. Because, you know, sometimes you need people who, sometimes the people who know you the best, really, you don't need to get advice from them because they know when you're outplaying your coverage. And I definitely was. So
yeah.
It's better to have people who are just like, yeah, you can do it.
I mean, did you have
alligators? And
did you have people like IRL friends that were like, what are you doing? Why are you doing that? Or were they up for you too?
Most of the people were pretty supportive. A couple of people pointed out that I wasn't riding the mountain bike nearly enough and that I was going to get handed my ass. And I did, but most people were, but a lot of people were like, oh, that's great.
And then they're like, what's an adventure race?
Yeah, there was a lot of that too. I mean, and I had just stumbled on it. Like I had found out about it, you know, maybe a year before and had started sort of following it and kind of knew what it was, but you don't really know what it is until you do the first one, you know?
Oh, well, that's very true. That may be a barrier to entry for some people that maybe it's better now, but it's like, I've heard of it. What is it?
Yeah, I think there's a ton more information out there for new people.
I can hear you. I'm going to let the dog out.
Okay.
I can still hear you. The modern technology.
Acompaño.
It's also nice because it's like 60 degrees out here. So.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. I actually had the birds outside for a while.
What kind of birds do you have?
Jimmy is, you can't quite see. Jimmy's Amazon. Yeah. Jimmy's an Amazon and Stevie's a Senegal. So.
Oh, wow.
They used to sit in here with me when I would do, you know, do interviews and stuff. And then I was with Chris Radcliffe and we were listening to some of them. They're like, them freaking birds are annoying. So
that's hilarious.
Well, I mean, after 25 years, I literally don't hear them anymore.
Right
in my ear. You know, they're like your kids. You just learn to ignore them.
Right. But yeah, so to your question, I think there's a lot of companies that are doing a lot of work demystifying the sport and making it more accessible for new people. Because face it, it's a really weird niche little sport. And if we want it to grow, then we need to get more people in it. Like the same 1,000 people that are doing it, you know, eventually are going to age out of it and we got to get more people doing it. And so I think there's a lot of companies doing a really good effort trying to demystify it. You know, I know now that I'm doing stuff, I want to do some videos on, you know, I mean, I was always referring people to YouTube stuff, you know, learn how to shoot a bearing, learn how to do this. And I'm hoping that my stuff will be really accessible for new people, but yeah, it's so much easier to get information than it used to be.
Yeah. Well, and even so what your debut was it 3 years ago?
Yeah. 3 years ago.
I mean, it's become a big deal. I mean, so much more now.
Yeah.
You know, I always thought, well, I could never quit the podcast because what else is there? Now I'm like, there's all kinds of stuff out there. I'd quit this anytime.
We need you, Randy. We need your voice.
Yeah. I'm not going anywhere yet, but but I don't feel the pressure as much anymore because with everything that's out there and becoming more accessible is, and a lot of those people are really, bringing things down to the, you know, here's the on off button, you know?
Yeah, right. I guess there was a point too, where it was sort of an unwritten rule of the sport that you never talked about it unless like you didn't go out of your way to show newbies. Cause that was part of the indoctrination into it was you just had to be thrown into the water and sink or swim. But I think that's, in my opinion, that's the wrong way to do it because you know, I think the retention rate in AR is something like 14%, like 14% of people who come and do a race ever come back and do another one. And everybody else goes, oh, fuck no, I'm never doing that again. Yeah. And I mean, think if you had 14% retention rate in a restaurant, you'd be out of business in 6 months, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So how do you grow a difficult niche sport if you're not trying to break down those barriers for people, you know?
Yeah. As it, you know, and of course, you know, we're just rehashing this conversation that how many other thousands of adventure racers have had, but it is still worth saying that it's hard to get into. It's not cheap.
It's not cheap. It's not cheap. You have to travel to it. You have to have the bike. You know, if you aren't racing with a company that includes the boats or is getting the boats from an outfitter, you have to have a boat, you know, and then you have to be able to transport it. So yeah, it's not cheap stuff. So, but you know, triathlon is super expensive too. Like the first time I realized to go to an Ironman costs like $2,000 by the time you factor everything in, I was like, holy cow, that's a lot of money. And that's not even counting the fact that your bike probably costs you $5,000. You know, if you're like a serious triathlon person, you probably get a $5,000 bike, and you know, your tri suit probably makes more than what I make in a week. So
there is that. People say, oh, God, well, entry fees are so expensive. I'm like, have you priced a triathlon or,
yeah,
I don't know, a 10K run anymore is not cheap. Mm-mm. So,
yeah. And there's so much include, you know, the putting on the races is not cheap, obviously, you know, like,
yeah,
the one I'm working on, Savannah, I mean, I have like 8 overlapping permit authorities that all have their hand out, you know, like, hey, so it's not a cheap endeavor, but
yeah.
But and, if you can do it, you can pull it off right. They're amazing. You know, they're just these amazing experiences. So.
Well, yeah. When Mark Harris told me what the check was, he wrote for permits for Worlds, I was aghast.
I can only imagine. Yeah.
Yeah.
I said, I think that's why a lot of people put them on like in, you know, the national forest and stuff, because then you just have one permit and you're just, you know, paying for it. But it's not cheap on either side of the table. So the more accessible, at least you can make it information wise, like, so people aren't going, oh, this is going to cost me $500 and I'm going to get my ass kicked. Great.
Yeah.
Although Spartan for 80.
Yeah, there's that, but you don't meet as many cool people, and you got to wear the dumb headband.
When I did the one,
I just lost out my whole Spartan audience, right?
I know. I the one triathlon I did, they gave us bright neon yellow swim caps, and a lot of people were like, "Oh, I already have my own," and they were like, "Okay, so you wear the yellow so that if someone kicks you in the face and you pass out, we can find your body at the bottom." And I was like, yeah.
Can I have two, please?
Yeah, can I have two? Because I'm a little nervous here.
Yeah. So how much whiskey did you have the night before you decided to put on an adventure race?
I had stepped down from where I was working. And I was like, God, you know, I've been working at a desk for the last 25. I mean, I'm your age. Like we're the same, basically.
Yeah.
I'm a little younger, but
I'm older.
I am. I was like, God damn, I've been driving a desk for the last 25 years, filling out Excel spreadsheets. Like, I'm just going to drive for DoorDash and be a dirtbag for a while. You know, I don't want to just go back to a desk job. And so as I'm driving around, you know, delivering people's egg rolls, I'm thinking, I have this whole notebook full of ideas that didn't really suit the place that I worked before. And so they never got used. Why don't I do something with them? You know, I mean, they're just sitting there. And so I had, you know, I had had ideas that just didn't quite suit their brand, or it wasn't really logistically feasible, or, and so I was like, you know what, I'm going to do something with these. And so I did. I put together a really awful website. And like, I think if I make any money on the Savannah race, it's going to go back into getting a professional looking website, because my website looks like it was done in MS Paint. So it looks like a MySpace page.
It's retro.
Yeah. But yeah. So yeah, I knew I didn't want to.
Yeah. I was going to say, kids, if you're listening, MS Paint was a thing
yes,
40 years ago.
Next, we talk about MySpace. Okay. Yeah.
Did you use Comic Sans?
No, although if you know Eric Wise, I'm sure you do. He once sent me an email and I sent him a note back saying, I don't know how to bring this up, but do you know your email font is in Comic Sans? And I gave him a hard time about that for 6 months. And he's like, listen, I'm not a corporate person, okay? I'm like, dude.
Yeah,
so yeah, it's whatever. Not quite that bad. But although yeah. I will say I launched it almost exactly a week ago because I launched it the Tuesday before Thanksgiving because it was my birthday. And I was like, that'll be auspicious. And I wanted it open for Thanksgiving because people are looking, you know, on the web. And I launched it and the payment software immediately shit the bed. Like it just went completely off. Because of course it did. Why not?
Yeah.
And I was like, God, you know, and I wound up having to tell everybody, listen, if you want to sign up, just email me. It'll be fine. I'll figure it out. So that would be tomorrow's project is installing new payment software on my website. Yeah. So
what was your early response?
It's been mixed. You know, there's a few people who've signed up and there's a few people who are kind of waiting to see how travel shakes out and stuff. But I'm hoping that it'll pick up. You know, it's a new thing and you have to get the word out about it. You know, obviously it's not like I've been putting on races for 10 years and people are beating down the door to do it, you know, yeah. They'll figure it out. I'm hoping that because I do know a lot of people in the field that people will pick up on it and be like, oh, that'll be fun. And it's because it's in Savannah where I don't think there's been one before. I think that will be kind of cool because people love Savannah. You can go for the whole weekend. You can stay in the cool historic part of Savannah, or you can stay out at Skidaway or out at the beach at Tybee. Like it's just a cool place to go for a long weekend. So I think that'll be a draw too. You know, you can bring your whole family and thrash around in the woods.
Yeah. So walk us through what you can of the race, what you're going to do. Just kind of what you got planned so far.
Hopefully it's going to begin and end at Skidaway Island State Park. I'm deep in the permit process with them. There's definitely going to be a segment that traverses historic Savannah, the historic district. There's quite a bit of mountain biking that I've managed to find down there that I'm sort of linking together some shorter segments that I think are going to be really cool. Not completely sure where the paddle is going to go yet. I'm still working with my outfitter on that, on what's a really good spot for that. Because there's just so much great kayaking and canoeing down there, like all those little creeks and stuff off of Skidaway Island and Wasa Island National Reserve and Nature Reserve. And so there's just really awesome paddling that goes through like these old, you know, the marshes are just primeval there. It just feels like it's been there forever. And so I'm looking forward to that. That's going to be really cool. So, but it's going to have some new elements, I think.
Yeah. So a little bit of urban, but mostly not urban.
Yeah.
So, well, I mean, that should be fun. I know talking with Cliff and Kate up at Strong Machine, you know, they've run their races through downtown Portland.
Oh, cool.
I think for a couple of times, and they said people really, really liked it. So,
yeah. Yeah, that's one of the cool things. Like every race has its own, you know, the director gives the race its own flavor. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So like, you know, Bend Racing, their stuff is like super mountainous and it's like incredibly hard and you might fall off a mountain. And you know, yeah. Katie Farrington has her stuff out in Colorado. And I love the way she moves her stuff every year. Like, I think that's really exciting that her courses are new every year. And so like each race director gives their races their own flavor. You know, their handprint is on it. So I think it'll be cool to be able to put one together of my own that's got its own flavor to it.
Yeah. So and we're 8-hour race to start with?
10.
10?
10. Yeah, I would have liked to get a 12, but I'm kind of compressed by how much real estate I can cover. There's more water than there is land there. So
lots of paddling legs.
Right. Then you get the logistics, you know, do you move the boats around? Do you do this? So, but that's all part of the, that's all part of the puzzle solving of it, which I really like. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, obviously that's probably the coolest part about, you know, the setting up of the race and stuff. Outside of permitting, what's the worst part about getting ready, especially putting together a new race?
Oh yeah. Figuring out if anybody's going to come. Yeah. That's definitely a little nerve wracking. Like, you know, I know exactly the number that I have to make. Like, I know exactly the number of people that have to sign up to meet my estimated costs, you know, so that I'm at least in the black. You know, it's not like it has to make, you know, I don't think any of the race directors doing this are in this to make $1 million. You know, I mean, I can go drive another shift for, you know, some more egg rolls and do that. But it is nerve wracking. Like, oh my God, what if nobody comes? What if I throw a party and nobody shows up? Like, that's just,
It's not that bad. I can tell you that from experience. Nobody ever comes to my parties. It's more cake for you.
That will learn that. Like, if I get a food truck that's got barbecue, I can just eat it all. But yeah, so I think that's probably the most nerve wracking. And of course, because it's a new event, and I'm trying to explain to these permitting authorities, okay, this is what we're going to do. And, you know, I'm going to have people running amok through this portion. I'm always trying to like phrase it as calmly as possible. Like, yeah, we're not going to rip your trails to shreds. And, you know, nobody's going to flip out and do anything crazy so that people will give me the permits. You know, like, here, I want to give you money. Take my money and give me my permit.
So what do you point them to? So you get somebody, you know, a lifetime bureaucrat, and we know it's easier for them to say no than yes, right?
Right.
Nobody ever gets in trouble in the government for saying no.
That's certainly true.
So what's your pitch? Do you, you know, sit down with them? Do you send them a link to Eco Challenge?
Oh God, no. I usually and I'm kind of folding in my experience at my previous employer too, when I'm dealing with anyone who is permitting a nature area, I lean really heavily on, listen, I know that you are absolutely stretched to the limits there. Dealing with this kind of thing is not what you want to spend your time doing. You know, you are the guardians of the forest and we are just coming in and being a pain in your butt. But, you know, our people, we are really avid nature lovers. We, you know, expect our racers to subscribe to leave no trace, you know, leave the place better than you found it. We're extremely safety conscious. You know, just on and on and on, just as soothingly as possible. Because I have found that telling somebody, yeah, listen, this is public land and you work for me, does not work.
Yeah.
Like, that gets you nowhere. There's no good is going to come of allowing that phrase to escape your mouth ever.
Yeah.
So, but the more you can, you know, and I also point out, but because of the nature of adventure racing, people are really spread out. So I'll be like, listen, we have 100 people, but they're going to be coming through over the space of 4 hours in groups of 2 or 4. Like, they're not going to beat your trail to death the way they would if it was like a classic mountain bike race or a classic trail run where they all come through like a herd of elephants. You know, these people are going to be trickling through. Some of them are going to, you know, be running, but some are just going to be hiking. And so it's much less impact. And so I try to lean on that too. That was big.
I mean, does that work? I mean, do you see this little sense of relief come across their face when they realize there won't be 100 people tramping through the flowers?
Right. So far, so good. We'll see. I may, I can tell you that last year I had to do permits for another company where someone had used the approach of, hey, this is public land and you work for me. And so their backs were up. And so I just pivoted completely and just, I mean, I did everything but send flowers and champagne, you know, and be like, listen, yeah. I understand that, you know, this is your calling and it's all about protecting the forest and we are on your side. Like, we want to use the forest in a non-impact, non-destructive way that people can get out and, you know, so on and so forth. And that eventually turned the tide and we got the permits for what we needed. But I think that approaching it that way was the way to go. I mean, yeah. And it is true. Like, these people don't go into working for the Forest Service because they enjoy paving roads. You know, a lot of them have, you know, science degrees and about biology and animal, you know, wildlife management and stuff like that. Like, they're not there to screw around with people like us. And if we can make it easy and just explain to them, like, listen, we're not going to screw up your bat nesting or, you know, your osprey breeding sites. Like, we're not there for that. We are there to appreciate what you are protecting, not to take advantage of it. I think that helps.
Yeah. Makes sense. And if you screw it up, I think it's a pretty valid point. You realize you're not screwing it up just for you. You're screwing it up for the next 17 people that want to do something, whether it's an adventure race or a trail run or a corporate picnic, which they should be denied anyway.
Well, you know, people in neckties need nature too.
Yeah, right, whatever.
So if you do work for the necktie, I heartily endorse quitting and moving into something else.
Yeah. Many, 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 many thousands of years ago, my mother basically ran the construction company where I worked. And I think I'd broken a wrist or something. So she would have me come in the office and help her out. And it's like, I couldn't do it. Sitting in the office for a couple hours is just like, nope. But yeah. Not to say I can't sit here and edit for 10 hours and not have a good time. So
right.
What does that say? Some of it
is like how much problem solving you're doing. Like, I say I love problem solving. That does not mean that I like sit around and do Sudoku all day, but I really like making all the moving parts work together. Like, that to me is really interesting. But yeah, filling out spreadsheets is not.
No. So, I mean, you really had a background in it, you know, figuring out adventure races and doing stuff. Has it been, how different is it when you're the only one, the only one?
Right. Well, it helps to remember that I was in project management before. You know, I was a project manager for TV commercials for 18 years. So I spent a lot of time making lots of very expensive moving parts work together. And at my last job, part of the way I talked my way in there was that, you know, listen, putting one of these adventure races together is really similar to putting a TV commercial together, except nobody's going to be doing cocaine off a hooker's back and,
no hookers and blow
that I know of. And
you know, there's a line on Excel that says miscellaneous.
Yeah, that's what that's for.
That's what that one's for. Yeah,
client services. Yeah, when I was in advertising, people asked me what it was like. I would be like, listen, it's everything bad about Mad Men, but with shittier clothes, because we all like homeless people. So I did that in that way for a long time. And so it's kind of exciting to like be the guy, you know, be like, okay. Yeah. And one of the beauties of adventure racing, because you don't release the course until the morning of the race. Like if one of the places I'm planning to use, I mean, I had planned this one, the beginning of it completely differently. And then I went down there to scout and I was like, oh crap, like this is not going to work because one of the parks that I wanted to use is having a massive earthworks redo to fix salt marsh drain, you know, whatever. I was like, oh snap, this isn't going to work at all. And so I had to go back to the drawing board, you know? And if one of my eight permitting people says, I don't think so, I can shift it around. You know, I have time.
Yeah.
Even if it's, you know, a month before the race and somebody goes, I don't think so, I could be like, oh, okay, punt, figure it out. So that is one of those things that helps with adventure racing. Like, you know, if you're putting on the Rock and Roll Marathon down in Savannah, you have to release the course, you know, 3 months beforehand, and it cannot shift a millimeter because it's permitted for exactly that
area. Every turn.
Yeah. So, and you know, I've had my hand in a lot of the different parts of it. Really the race design was the only thing that I haven't done. So now I get to actually do that as well.
Do the fun part. So, which is more stressful, spending your money hoping 100 people show up or setting the budget for $1 million commercial shoot?
That's a really good question. You know, I've been out of TV commercials. Like now I'm picking up freelance gigs now here and there again in between egg roll deliveries, and I'm like, oh yeah, this is why that's annoying. I forgot about that. all right. Vegan bee pollen restaurant. Right. Forgot about that. That used to be the joke that people would come to town and be like, is there a vegan bee pollen restaurant? And you'd be like, no, go back to Los Angeles.
This is the barbecue place.
I think probably, even though it's smaller, it's a little more nerve-wracking to do this because obviously if I flame out, everybody's going to know about it.
Yeah.
I'm going to go down in flames and everybody's going to be able to see it. but that's, you know, you kind of have to take that leap, you know? You know, and again, that's one of the reasons I wanted to step down from where I was and do something else was because I had these ideas that didn't really suit their risk level. You know, like they had a 5-person staff and those people are working their asses off. Like you can't take a chance on a race that's not going to do well. And then all of a sudden you can't pay people, you know, you can't do that. But being a one-man band, you know, if I put on a race in South Carolina and it sucks and nobody goes, well, you know, then maybe I throw some stuff on eBay and just make up for it that way and try again.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So
nothing venture, nothing gain.
Right. Yeah.
All right. I'm going to start skipping around now, but.
Okay.
Because I got some other questions that aren't adventure racing, but what are you going to consider? How will you consider the race a success?
Yeah. If I can get enough people signed up to cover the costs and if everybody loves it, like, well, everybody doesn't have to love it, but I want everybody to have a great time and be safe. You know, I think we've all learned our safety lessons there. You know, everybody just do the race and just have a blast. I mean, like, oh my God, that was so much fun. I want it to be fun. You know, like that was one of the things I wanted sort of the theme of the new company to be was that adventure racing wasn't just about going out and thrashing yourself in the woods until you were miserable just to get a t-shirt. Like I wanted it to be fun. I wanted to have a really good atmosphere. So if everybody comes off it, if at least half the people come off it and say, oh my God, that was a blast, then I'll be happy. I'll be content.
Hey, you got a beer sponsor, so that'll go a long ways to make everybody happy.
Right. That's a that place, yes, White Whale Craft Ales. Check them out, 1207 Bull Street. Yeah. That's an awesome little shop. And they have like retro video games and stuff. So while you're in there getting hammered, you can play video games.
That must be the new thing. Even in Rapid City now, they've got an old.
Oh, really?
It was a bar, and it was a coal-fired pizza place, and now it's an arcade with old school.
Oh, okay. Yeah, and I was actually talking to the owner of that place today, because I was telling him, you know, that the promo is going to run today and blah, blah, blah. And he was telling me they don't serve food there unless they're having special events. You know, they just do the beer. But he's like, yeah, we have a new integrated thing where there's an iPad at all the tables and at the bar, and you can order food from any of the local restaurants and they'll deliver it to the store. So you can be like, you know what would be fabulous with this beer? Tapas. And then you can have some tapas sent over and you can sit there and eat. And he's like, yeah, because some places would be like, no, you can't bring in outside stuff. But he's like, we love it. Like, people love it and they stay longer and they have a better time. And that's what it's about. So, but that's a great shot.
Not that either of us know any about this, but I wonder if that's become more common now in the last year and a half because everybody's ordering food from everywhere and going, you know, so it's like, well,
yes,
what's the big deal to do?
Yeah. And if you are ordering food delivery in Decatur, Georgia, tip generously because the adventure race you save may be your own.
That's true. What's the largest amount you've delivered of food?
You know, it hasn't been that bad. Like, I haven't picked up anything. It's been like an entire buffet full of food. You know, it's usually like stoner food because I work the early shift. So I get you from like 4:00. Mine. I'm not the people who are working the late night shift. Those are the guys who get the order for like 15 pizzas and things like that. So it's usually like people's dinner. Like, they come home and they're like, I can't fucking deal with cooking tonight. And they call it, you know.
Yeah.
And having been there, like, I'm right there with them. I'm like, yeah, I don't want to cook either. Like, I cooked something fancy last night for dinner, and I can assure you tonight will be scrambled eggs because there's no way I'm doing that again. So yeah, it's a lot of Chinese food and Thai food and, you know, stuff like that. The real stoner food comes in later, the 15 hamburgers and stuff.
Yeah. No, you're not jaded enough to have any good stories yet.
No, I haven't done it long enough because I only started doing it a few weeks ago. So,
my other question.
I think I've been unemployed for like 2 months today. It's like, it's today, 2 months today. So I haven't had that much time to be like, oh my God, I'm never delivering to that house again. So,
yeah. There's that. So now I want to go way back.
Okay.
Name a commercial you worked on that we would know.
Okay.
Or let's a brand. I'll let you go.
Oh yeah. Yeah. If anybody has seen, there's an ad for Air Jordans that ran last summer, I think. That's these guys in a bodega, and like they step through the cooler in the bodega and they go to this cool place that's where they can get all these cool shoes. That was for Air Jordan. I worked on that. I've worked on a ton of Georgia Lottery stuff, which has weird themes. And I always used to say that my most famous person I had ever worked with was Fabio, because I worked with him on a Georgia Lottery job. That was like way in the beginning. I was working in the wardrobe department, and I had to give him his pants, you know, like, which size pants do you wear? And he looked at me and went, in a voice full of promise, medium. I said, here you go. there's actually a Mayfield ice cream ad that I did 2 years ago that's still running. It has a little girl talking to her cow, Matilda. If you ever see that ad, I worked on that. What else that people would know? Shoot. There's so many of them. And then I used to do a lot of what we call EPK work, which stands for electronic press kit. And that's the behind the scenes stuff for TV shows and movies. So I never worked on TV shows or worked on movies, but I would manage the unit that came in and like did the behind the scenes interviews and the still shots and the shit that would go on the DVD later. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And for a long time, my claim to fame was that I had done an EPK unit for Black Panther, the first one. They're filming the second one now. And I was so excited because Forrest Whitaker was going to be there. And I'm like a huge Forrest, I'm a huge fan. And when I was standing by the craft service table, when he came sweeping in his full costume to have his photos taken, and I almost passed out. You know, I was like, oh, damn. For 6 months, like after that, anytime anybody asked me about, you know, anything related to acting or whatever, I would be like, well, you know, when I was on Black Panther with Forrest Whitaker, I mean, it's extraordinary, the architecture and the scholarship that the man brings to the role. So you have to see it. I mean, the man walked past me while I was eating a donut, you know?
Yeah. Well, hey, at least you didn't say hi, Mr. Fishburne.
No, but I did sneak up behind the camera so I could watch his pictures being taken. And of course, you know, now after Chadwick Boseman blew up from that movie, everybody's like, oh my God, you did something with Chadwick Boseman. Like, I didn't even know who he was at the time. He was just like, yeah. You know, like Angela Bassett was there and I was like, God damn, she looks good. And of course, Forrest. And then, and I once did a behind the scenes for a movie called Confirmation, which was about the Anita Hill trial, and it had Kerry Washington in it. But John Voight had some like B roll as a prosecutor or something. And I was dying to ask him about Anaconda. Like, I was like, what is it like to work with a giant fake snake? And everybody was like, don't do it. Don't. Nothing good will come from that. So I had to control myself.
That to me seems like that's one of those things. It's either like, he storms off the set or you're his best friend.
Right.
But the risk is a little high there.
The risk was high. Yeah. And yeah, if you get bounced, you may not get paid. So I wasn't going to deal with that, but I was like, God, it's killing me. So what else? Yeah. Like that's, you know, and I've done like a million little, working in television advertising is the most glamorous, boring job in the world.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like everybody thinks it's like nothing but glamour, and it's getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning and filling out spreadsheets and dealing with insurance claims because somebody dropped a camera lens, and you know, finding out that somebody ordered Thai food for lunch and half the crew is allergic to peanuts, and you know, it's just like endless problem solving all day long, but with Excel spreadsheets. So
which I don't know if I want to ask which is harder, which is more fun, because I would think with commercials you're in and out and it's probably pretty exciting, you get things done and boom boom boom, but then you have a movie, which would seem like that's probably a little longer process.
That's one of the reasons I never worked on movies. I didn't think I had the attention span for it. Like if you sign on to a movie, you signed on to a movie for a long time. You know, I have a friend who worked in the art department on Fast and the Furious, the one where Paul Walker died. Which one was that? 7, 6? I can't even remember what the number is.
Fast and Furious.
Yeah, exactly.
That one.
17 through 42. And she worked on it. And then, of course, he was killed really late in the production. And so they started shutting down. I think he was killed like halfway through, and they started shutting down, but because she was in the art department, it took them 6 weeks to pack everything up and return it all. And the day they packed up the last box, they got the word that they had reworked the script and everybody was back on. And she wound up being on that movie for, I want to say 19 months. I was like, I'd jumped out the window. There's no way I could do this thing for 19 months. I would have fled into the forest, never to return. So I think the longest
you did flee into the forest.
Flee into the forest, didn't I? Yeah. I think the longest TV commercial I ever worked on was a spot for Southwest Airlines. and it was 28 days. And it was a long 28 days. But ironically, like half of my squad that I know now all come off that one job because we just went through hell for the 28 days together. So yeah,
makes sense. Yeah. All right, here's a very specific question just because of who I am and my background. But is the set photographer on the set the whole time for a movie?
No, they come specific days. Yeah, they usually pick days where something cool is happening. They're not there all the time. And sometimes they have them do the stuff simultaneous, which in that case, they have to have the camera blimped so it doesn't make any noise, even with digital stuff. And then sometimes they set it up separately, like the EPK unit is separate, and then they'll have the photographer set up the same thing to do like the portraits and the close-ups and stuff that go on the DVD packaging and the posters and all that stuff.
I mean, I want to just go there and hang out all day. Like,
I'm convinced.
Oh, donuts.
I'm convinced that you can get onto any set anywhere with like a lanyard, a clipboard, and a Starbucks coffee. And if anybody says anything, you can say like, do you know where the producer is? Because I'm supposed to get him this chai latte and I don't know where he is. And he's going to kill me. And people will be like, oh yeah, that. And you just go. Yeah.
Yeah.
I did that at Music in Town, actually. When I first moved to Atlanta, like the second year I was here, there was a killer Music Midtown. And I took a clipboard with me and like a thing on a lanyard. And I got behind backstage, like in like six or seven different stages. And I was walking around talking to people.
Yeah.
I really should not be left unsupervised at all.
Yeah. Well, I found that the safety vest works good. Safety vest and a camera will get safety you vest, almost anywhere too. And as many people have said, just walk in there like you belong.
Or muttering and counting on your fingers. That's good too. Because then people think you're like trying to figure something out. Like, that's a good one too. That's a good way to make people feel you're busy.
Yeah. Or just like,
that will probably get you tased.
Yeah. So it's early in the system, but you got other things planned floating around in your mind.
Yeah.
You get 170 people for your first race so you can keep moving.
Yeah, that would be great. I think probably 150 would be all I can handle. Although I guess I could get more help, but yeah, I do have a lot of ideas. I want to put them on. I'm going to move into some different, geographic areas, not just Georgia. And I really want to use them. I can't figure out how to say this without being corny, but like, I want to be able to do stuff that sort of gives back, So like I'm negotiating with, a wildlife charity that's in Tybee. Because I want to, with the Savannah race, I want to give 2% of the registration fees that I take in as a charitable donation. Because again, we're using these areas and we're impacting the stuff. And I'd like to do sponsor an adaptive athlete team. I think that would be great to have, because I think a lot of people know Team Unbroken, and they know Gretchen and Anne and how great that the stuff that they have shown what people can do even. And I think the team disability people do some of that too, but I think that would be great to. But I'd like to put on a winter event that just has trekking and biking without the paddle part, because you can get away with that down here without freezing everybody's ass off. And there's a lot of, cool coastal places that I think would be fun. But again, you gotta string together enough real estate, so that you can, so that people aren't just running around in a circle, one of the guys from Off the Grid is interested in putting on something way down in South Florida, and they've apparently been playing around with that design for a while, but they don't have the time to do the logistics, you know? So yeah. I'm like, well, I'll do the logistics half, you know, if you guys design the race. So that would be really cool. But that's a long, I think that's the only longer race that I will do. I think I'd like to keep everything to 12 hours, you know?
Yeah.
I pulled a lot of 27 hour shifts at the old gig. I don't really, I'm getting too old for that.
27 hours. Not done, Randy. Can't take it anymore.
I know, I'm such a wuss. Yeah. So
see, I managed to realize and justify, air quotes, people, justify there is only so much video of bike headlights going by that you need. So you really don't need to be out there from like midnight to 5 a.m. if you don't
want to.
So that,
well, I do think it would be a kick-ass idea to have a race that was a 12-hour race that started at midnight and ended at noon the next day. And then you get the dark bit out of the way in the beginning. And once the sun comes up, like, you know, you're like racing the clock. You know what I mean? Like, as the sun's going up, like, and it would help beat the heat too, if you wanted to put it, you know, down here in a warmer month. But I think that I'd love stuff that like tells a story like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's probably from being in television, but I love that kind of idea that you know where you're going, and it's like this story that you have to go through. And there is something about adventure racing at sunup, you know, the sun rises and like you get that rush of circadian energy, even though you feel like you're beat to death, and
it's
all of a sudden you feel better, you know.
Yeah,
I think that would be a cool idea. So yeah, so I have a few ideas banging around, but I have to like figure out where I put them and stuff.
Yeah, that's the
how many egg rolls I can deliver.
Well, that's it. You're driving around. You're probably sort of experiencing what I do. I'm almost literally by myself all day long, and there's a lot of weird shit goes through my head during the day. So a lot of people don't have that time. They just don't have that time to daydream, blah blah, whatever, you know, let things come into their head. And you know, a lot of, okay, this presumes that I've had good ideas, but a lot of my good ideas are like in the middle of the day, just pop into my head.
They're when you're out on a hike, or, you know, you're in the shower or whatever, doing yard work.
So it's good. You have your DoorDash time.
Got the podcast going. Yeah. Just chilling.
Yeah. All right. Here's maybe our last question.
Okay.
So this is, watch this, people. This is how a professional works. I'm going to tie everything together.
Okay.
So when they make the movie, The Ballad of Tracy and the Legend, who directs it? Lars von Trier or Robert Eggers?
Okay, I'm going to admit that I only know one of those two names. Actually, I think it would probably be Edgar Wright, who's the guy who did Shaun of the Dead.
That's a good, I probably should have just asked you who you would.
Yeah, because I'm kind of a goofball, you know. I mean my company mascot is a possum, you know. It's not like I'm a really serious, intense person. So,
but is the mascot a possum or a possum on wheels?
He's just a possum. But my friend Danielle, who I raced the turkey burn last week, she sent me that toy. That picture of that toy where I guess it's like one of those cars and you run it up and down and then it takes off on its own. So yeah.
Yep.
But even when I had my logo designed, I had a drawing that was a possum, like kind of giving a thumbs up, and it made me laugh. And I tried to find the artist because I was like, let me license this. Like, I love this drawing. Mm-hmm. And I never could figure out who did it. I searched everywhere, all kinds of Google searches and whatever. So I got a designer and I showed it to him and I said, listen, I want this, but make it funnier. Like, make it funny. You know, I'm a goofball person, and my races are going to be, I want it to be me, you know? And he came back with that drawing. And as soon as I opened the file, I started laughing. And I was like, yeah, that's it. That's perfect.
So it's kind of funny because I'm looking right here on the screen. I have my logo, which this kid, native kid, did for me, which it literally 5 minutes, you know, but the mountains with the film strip in it. It's But he's also got this one for the Knife Squirrel Adventure Race team, which that's maybe even a longer story than me saving your life, but
in 18 inches.
I might drop that in the notes so people can see. There's like 8 people that will appreciate the Knife Squirrel logo, but
so do you want,
one's pretty want good.
Do you want me to tell the story for the audience?
No, I think it's better leave them wanting a little bit.
Right.
That's a story that should be told in person.
In person. Yeah.
I mean, even though this episode, if you're listening to it now, we recorded on the first. This is probably going out, I'm thinking, New Year's Eve.
Oh, nice.
I thought it was a good way to kick off the New Year's. I got a couple of worlds. People will have listened to the last couple of world championship episodes. So, look what we got.
Yeah. So he wants to jump on the laptop, step on the stand.
Well, of course. So this will be, you know, all those people that are looking for New Year's resolutions. So I guess we should say, what is the official name of the race?
The official name of the race is the Savannah Scramble. Can't stop that. And it is April 9th, 2022 in Savannah, Georgia. And they can register for it at the website, which is www.possumjump.com.
That's like World Wide Web or something like that.
Yes.
So there'll be links in it.
I'm on the line.
And if you register and tell people you registered because you heard it on the podcast, Tracy will buy you a beer and tell you the story.
Yes. 10 hours of glory in Savannah and the surrounding environs. Don't get eaten by an alligator.
That's good advice anytime.
At any point, really. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. I'm going to go take the dog for a hike because it's 60 degrees out at 6 o'clock at night. It's first.
Well, December, I was going to say, it's only 6 o'clock where you are.
Yeah.
I'm going to make my scrambled eggs. So I'm not driving tonight. So I don't have to, I don't have time to like go by Bell Street and pick up a burrito.
Yeah. So there's that. Well, I actually got some work for my other video gig to do tonight too. So.
Okay.
So it's 17 days till we go race. Oh, see, this will be fun because this will be like weeks after. So I'll be in Florida in 17 days.
Oh, okay.
At Sebring at the sports car track. So Sebring has 17 turns. So I'm doing a turn a day countdown, like countdown to Christmas. So I have to put up turn one today. So
right.
So I got work to do.
Work to do.
Sit and chat with you all day. So interestingly enough, this is probably the longest time we've ever actually had a chance to sit and talk.
I know, because we're usually running around like chickens without a head. I want to know when you're going to bring Paulette to. I want to know when you're going to bring Paulette to an event so I can meet her. Because you know she's like my idol, right?
Yeah.
Like if I can finish out the last half of my life a quarter as badass as Paulette is, that's like mission accomplished. I'm there.
Yeah.
So, like I will go buy tonight.
Yeah, she's in Oregon right now, so she's always something new. So,
right,
a friend of hers worked in this clinic and said, "Hey, they might need somebody."
Uh-huh.
So instead of going through an agency, she basically went in and did it on her own.
Oh, okay.
So not going to, so I have to do everything. So she's there for 3 weeks, and she gets there Monday, and they're like, "We fired 10% of the staff of the clinic because they wouldn't get vaccinated."
Oh my God.
And so here's the new thing. Medicare,
uh-huh.
Am I getting this right? Medicare will not pay any providers if the staff isn't 100% vaccinated.
Oh, you know what? That's probably for liability, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah.
because that's
so she shows up into this shoe show and she's like, yeah, whatever, I'll deal with it. And they're like, really, you will? Oh, cool.
Yeah, when I was in Florida last week, like the first thing I did was tote my mom to get her booster shot. Like that was literally the first thing on the list.
Yep.
Like I got in at 9 o'clock at night and at 10 o'clock next morning, trundle mom down to Walgreens.
Get it done.
Sure. So.
All right, cool. Well, it's been a stone cold gas. And hey, everybody, if you've made it this far, go register. That'll take care of all your New Year's resolutions for getting in shape and getting fit. You'll have a good time and you get to hear the story.
Weather will be beautiful. And yes, I will tell the story to anyone who asks.
Yeah. What more could you ask for? All right.
Okay.
So here comes the awkward. So Garrison told me last year when they were doing Zoom calls, everybody, you know, in this, the whole company before he was with USRA, they just appointed somebody on each call to literally hit the end button.
Oh, so that would end. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I had to do the live stream. That was my job. Like I had to wait for everybody to get off and then I'd give some cheerful outro and then I would be done with it for another week. I hated those things.
Hey, it's TV. You're just not an on-camera person.
Other side of the camera. Okay. I'm going to be the designated person to kill. I'm leaving you. I'm leaving you, Randy.
Okay.
It's not working.
Stopping recording.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye.